So, a prominent veteran NPR editor has been suspended and, as of just a few hours ago, resigned from NPR for blowing the whistle on that joint and calling out their biases. Meanwhile, people are starting to question, myself included, question Tucker Carlson for like throwing back Moscow mules and braiding awful peoples like Putin's non-existent hair and Candace Owens and the Daily Wire part. They have a little squabble and they part ways. What is the consistent theme here, class, with all of these things? Methinks it's the idea of questioning authority. And all I have to say is bring in the Pepsi ads because this shit is my motherfucking Super Bowl, bitch. I have been waiting for this moment. No, actually, this has become my wheelhouse inadvertently and also on for like this has been my hill to die on. But when it comes to protecting free speech. And so this Barbie has questions. This Barbie is questioning authority. And let's kick it all off today. Like before we get to the fringe of Tucker and Candace, like floating in their crazy world, like probably in Antarctica somewhere, okay, with their borderline conspiratorial ways. Let's start with the semi-sane verse. You guys won't believe. Again, like Riri said, don't act like you forgot. How many times have I had to tell you that all roads lead to and from? Like, call me Glenda the Good Witch because all roads lead to and from the yellow brick road that is this show. Is it truth? Is it millennial narcissism? We will find out because get a load of this. It's a huge national news story right now that Uri Berliner, again, editor at NPR for 25 years, hardcore liberal, came out to blow the lid off of this joint. And so, in the run of the mill, like we have seen this story before, you know, he becomes the scapegoat. They go against him. He's suspended. He resigns. Guess what? Basically, the same thing. I experienced the same thing in 2016 at VH1. I will hard Michael Phelps dive into the details for you, okay? And in a plot, same thing, resigned out of principle, like good old Uri here, but in a plot twist, y'all never saw coming. I was actually on NPR in 2021, 3 years ago, to talk about it and to talk about all of these principles and things that I was burned at the stake for then, wrote in an op-ed, which is why NPR had me on to talk about all of these things, right? Diverse opinions and, you know, narratives that are inconvenient for these establishments and big players and what have you, and, you know, stifling thought and all these things. So let me unpack this just like where in the world is Carmen Sandiego and our brain cells. Okay, I'm gonna unpack this a little bit, but yes, the turn of events is indeed wild. Rod Serling, it is the Twilight Zone 2.0 millennial virgin Gen Z lookout, bitch. So, Uri Berliner came out on the Free Press, which you know is my gospel, is my Bible, is the Holy Grail, okay, of free thinking. And he wrote an op-ed about, listen, like I've been at NPR for 25 years. We've lost America's trust, and it just ain't the place to be. Like, it is just not the vibe. But not only that, in all seriousness, talking about how basically all of the employees were these, you know, hardcore progressive liberals, like no conservatives as far as the little eye can see. And he even gives examples. He talks about, you know, people that they would have on, stories they would highlight. Again, none of this is anything new, which I'm going to get to my reaction to all of this when I first saw it. He even talks about things like how in the Hunter Biden laptop story, again, the tale as old as time that will haunt our dreams forever into the afterlife, okay? Even when the Hunter Biden laptop story came out, how people in the newsroom at NPR would say, like, we can't run this. It'll make Trump look good. And in light of all this, there's this new lady CEO over there, and all of these tweets have been unearthed regarding her biases about how Trump is this racist and, you know, downplaying all of the riots that like burned America to the ground in 2020 and what have you, right? So all of these explicit explanations of how over time it just became this sort of unspoken groupthink bias place. And the thing about NPR that's so unique, unlike honestly a VH1 where I experienced this, is that it's publicly funded, national public radio. Bitch, we just did our taxes, like April 15th, the doomsday, like the real doomsday. We're going to talk about Christianity in a minute, like the day of judgment indeed. Our taxpayer dollars go to this. And so it is their duty to uphold the First Amendment right of free speech and not funnel everything out through their narrative, through their lens, through things they want to push. It's just not okay, period, full stop, point blank. And that's exactly what he was getting at. So to make a long story short, he proceeds to go on a subsequent interview on Barry Weiss's podcast, honestly, and just fleshes out a little bit more of what he talked about in the op-ed that seemed to rock the journalism world when Barbie here, like, don't underestimate a blonde. Again, how many times do I have to tell you? Because I have been talking about, I am blue in the face. I have been talking about this, okay, since the dawn of the dead. AKA Joe Biden's birthday. No, I'm just kidding. So what ends up happening, to no surprise, is NPR just completely rails in on him. They put him on suspension like a bad little boy and say how betrayed they feel by him. And again, keep in mind, this is a liberal man saying this, right? But even he was like, this whole crusade and obsession with villainizing Trump or any conservative viewpoints or this, or pushing progressive viewpoints and brushing inconvenient facts under the rug or people or voices or what have you. Even he's saying this, right? Meanwhile, you have people in the newsroom just completely railing on him, how they feel so, you know, betrayed and how he was so disloyal and they can't invite him back in the newsroom and all this. So within 24 hours, he resigns and he writes, basically, he's kind of like, good riddance. Like, I don't even want this. I want this place to reestablish its greatness and what it's supposed to be about. I have nothing but high regard for the journalism there and what they can do and what they're actually capable of if they didn't let their own narratives get in the way. He pins a lot of it on this new CEO. Like, we're not talking Glenda the Good Witch, we're talking the Green Witch. Can't even remember her name, but she'll probably ring a bell with her and how she sort of perpetuates this very divisiveness within that organization. But he's basically like, toodles, good riddance, like, wish you all the best. So the crazy thing, like I said, about all of this is that I too experienced this at a huge organization, VH1, over the same thing. And then in the crazy twist of events that no one ever saw coming, like I said, I was on NPR only 2.5-3 years ago to discuss this very thing that he blew the lid off, like I said, on it. Like, everybody's talking about this story. So what happened with me, if you don't know in a nutshell, is in 2016, God forbid, again, like, how dare you, like, go again, you know, stray away of the common theme. In my world, it was entertainment, pop culture reporting, and how dare you, you know, be critical of, you know, woke warrior queen celebrity. Like, we can't be having that. At the time, I called out Chrissy Teigen's cyberbullying on Twitter because I found it wildly hypocritical that she was trying to combat what she saw, she saw as bullying against her by more bullying. And so I called it out in a piece that at the time, my editor agreed with. I have the deets, the DMs, the Slack, you name it, I have the receipts. And the title was called Chrissy Teigen is Twitter's Biggest Hypocrite. And I just talked about how perpetuating this cycle of bullying doesn't change anything, that it just makes it worse. And I gave a couple of things in there, like remedies and approaches to take and what have you. It wasn't just me railing on her. It was very constructive, you know, constructive critical thinking, if you will, like SATs, may you rest in peace. And again, we've already established meritocracy and testing cannot be, it is misogynistic and racist. So we're just not going to do it anymore. But anyway, it became a whole national news story because Chrissy Teigen didn't like it. She tweeted publicly at VH1 publicly at me and what have you, just like NPR, VH1 took her side. They proceeded to take the piece down and suspend me. And I'm a young reporter, fresh on the scene, like wide-eyed, like a little Bambi. And I, out of principle, quit over this very thing off of what Uri is talking about. This was 7 years ago. Almost to the day, basically. So what have you but the 7 year itch of I told you so, bitch. And so I, in principle, said the same thing as him, like, have my back. It boiled down to the fact that, number one, of course, like, how could you say something about, you can't, God forbid, upset the celebrity or paint them in a bad way or say something they don't like. But it became an employee versus employee issue because we were both employed by Viacom. And I was like, I don't give two shits. I've been here longer. I'm a dedicated employee. And so out of principle, like, where is the loyalty? Like, have my back. So I too quit. So the crazy turn of events is in 2021, when Chrissy Teigen's bullying scandal came to light, her going in people's DMs unwarranted, completely antagonizing them, harassing them, telling them to kill themselves. I wrote an op-ed in USA Today chronicling my experience, but furthermore, my bigger point that cancel culture and going round and round, canceling Chrissy Teigen again, isn't going to solve dick. It's not going to solve anything. Let's have a dialogue. Let's have a discourse. And so what have you, but in 2021, I was brought on NPR to talk about it. And the crazy thing is, I was saying everything now and all of these principles and ideals that Ori Berliner said in Barry White, on Barry Weiss's podcast in his essay. Listen, the link is live. You don't even have to subscribe. You can go on to NPR and listen and or read it. Like, have a Web3, you know, really immersive experience with this. If you're not getting enough hearing my voice right now. And I even said the same thing to NPR, to the reporter Lulu at the time, when she was asking me about my point of view, I said, look, it's the same thing as, you know, canceling anybody and like ostracizing, you know, men out of the conversation when it comes to things like, you know, Me Too and women and women's issues and what have you, like ostracizing them isn't going to get anything accomplished. Let's bring men in the fold in that regard. In this regard, let's bring Chrissy Teigen in the fold. It's always an eye for an eye, this side over that side, tit for tat, evening the score. And in the end, it doesn't get us anywhere. And I said, you know, free speech is so important because what happens is like, this may be, you know, for as frivolous or not an example, like a celebrity pop culture entertainment example with Chrissy Teigen. But when it comes down to it, you know, what happens when you stifle opinions? It's like NPR and what we're seeing at large. People, you lose their trust, but not only that, they hide in the shadows. They resent it. It festers. It builds up even more. And then what? Like, what happens when the Nick Fuentes's are out and about conspiring with Alex Jones and procreating, playing Ring Around the Rosie, and then all of a sudden come out with their own doomsday plans, like Oscar the Grinch out of the sewer, out of nowhere? Like, is that what we want? So I'm saying this to NPR at the time, again, just to advocate for different opinions and voices and free speech and all of this. And I had a great experience, but I will say, plot twist, they did not invite me back. And so there you have it. Unfortunately, what happened with this whole NPR thing is that they proved his point, right? By completely trashing him, bashing him, suspending him, he resigns, the whole thing. Instead, like, I think there were maybe a couple reporters in the room who acknowledged what he said, like, yes, I'm a liberal and this is a problem. But otherwise, for the most part, it was just completely, tearing down his character and devaluing him and all this. And so, like I said, they totally, you know, proved his point. And it really, the whole thing got me reflecting on even my experience. And this is why, because I don't mean to sound like Oscar the Grinch, but I'm not going to lie. When I first heard about this story, before I even saw the public reaction, I read the piece for myself. I listened to his podcast with Barry for myself. You can bug my apartment. I don't care. And also enjoy the view while you're at it. I was like, why is this revolutionary? Again, I'm always going to give people like him like major kudos and props for sticking up against the man. But this to me has been completely obvious. It's so obvious. It is common sense. The proof is in the pudding, people. Like, this has been so obvious to me clearly for at least 7 years. So why are we so shocked by this? Is it because it's publicly funded? Like, why are we so surprised? And in light of this, I reflected and I read back on a subsequent piece to all of this. Or I'm sorry, this was in the middle of the initial Chrissy Teigen piece and me being on NPR. And smack dab in the middle of that in 2018 is when I did my Playboy feature on Free Expression. And at the time, I read my essay. So again, this was 2018. And even in that essay, I detail all of the times, again, even if it is in the, you know, lighter pop culture entertainment world, all of the times that, you know, my own editors at these so-called progressive or feminist sites were so intolerant of my views or pitches I had or quotes I had from celebrities, like anything that they were afraid of or, God forbid, didn't fit their narrative, right? Or the time, again, when I was painted by the media as another Me Too victim because of my interaction with Morgan Freeman. So I wrote an opposing op-ed saying I was totally fine with the interaction. Again, painting every woman as if she's some, you know, helpless victim isn't helping any causes here all around. And it got me thinking about, you know, and even in that Playboy essay I talked about, again, this is 2018, how already we were at the precipice and starting to see people torn down, devalued for opinions that others didn't like. And it made me think about all of the times that I would, you know, pitch stories or ideas and they were just turned down. Hey, give it the benefit of the doubt. I mean, I think Barbie is Pulitzer worthy right here. Maybe they just weren't good pieces. But in Elwood style, I object, okay? Because ultimately some of my pieces did run. Obviously my USA Today op-ed about Chrissy Teigen, my Huffington Post op-ed about Me Too hypocrisy at the time, my Morgan Freeman op-ed, which was published in Playboy. But there are so many times when I felt, even when it came down to celebrity interviews themselves, I felt like there was this like shadow constantly over me and over my shoulder of like, no, you can't ask that. You can't do, oh, I was like this paranoia because everything had to be in this lens of, you know, Trump is a big goon who's a dumb idiot and is bad for us. Everything is patriarchal. Everything is misogynistic. We have to push diversity, equity, inclusion at all times, at all costs. Why is that the best thing ever? Yes, praise girl, praise be. Yes, bitch, go, blah, blah, blah. I mean, even I was looking back in my Vulture archives and I even wrote stories, you know, because the editors wanted anything they could get, like a celebrity making fun of Trump or why Trump is so stupid or whatever it is, or a dig at him. And, you know, I too, even though, you know, how much I agreed or disagreed was like in that mill, like I saw it from the inside and I'm so grateful that I was able to call it out and that Playboy allowed me to call all of this out in 2018. So all that goes to say, you know, I'm glad to see this happening. Twisty, topsy, turvy, kooky, crazy turn of events. Yet again, my crystal balls are really popping. Again, you know, not to sound like a downer, not to sound like Scrooge, but why was this so revolutionary? Why is this such a surprise? We should be seeing more of this. But what have you now? But we have two curious cats who have taken this idea of questioning authority and taken it to the nth degree. And now it's like super cagifragilistic acidosis fringe. Okay, sorry to Julie Andrews for butchering your words. But let's first talk about quickly about Tucker Carlson before we get into Candace Owens, because you guys, in preparation, like I gotta cross my T's, dot my I's. I may as well write a Candace Owens biography by now, okay? I went into the trenches of every word that this lady has said because in order to present it to you, I want to make sure that I know my shit and that I have it right. But before that, let's talk quickly about Tucker Carlson because I think there's something to be said about how in the height of authority, media, government, corporations, right, trying to control and all be on the same bandwagon, control the national discourse, what we do, how we think, Tucker was really like the man in shining armor. Like, we're swimming up like Little Mermaid with our little flippers, our mermaid tails, and there is Tucker Carlson, as wacky and as flappy as his hair that it may be. But at the time, it was really refreshing because he would question things around the Russia collusion conspiracy, which proved to be false, around COVID lockdowns, around all of the violence and riots going on, all of these things, right? But now, Tucker's gone, he don't get a little crazy, for me, at least. Because I feel like Tucker's gone. There was a really great piece about this in the Free Press that reflects this idea. He's gone from questioning authority, I feel like, so much now, to almost aligning with the fringe, the extreme, the bad guy, so to speak. And it makes me think, to what end? But then again, who's to say to what end? Again, I'm always an advocate for more speech, not less. So who's to say where you draw a line? A couple of examples of this, right, are, you know, Tucker and his ex show has had people like Andrew Tate, Marjorie Taylor Greene, who, that lady is a whole little ball of conspiracy in herself, like in and of herself. Like, I'm not even going to, like, some things I'm here for and I live for, and some other things I'm like, girl, the psych ward is that away, babe. Like, you'll make it chic, but let's do this, right? He also had Putin, which I really admired. By the way, I don't need to be sheltered from Vladimir Putin. Like, I want to hear what Putin has to say. So that's not the issue. And as of late, that's very controversial to talk about how Christians are being treated in the Israel-Palestinian conflict. But Bethlehem pastor Munther Isaac, who is literally a loud, proud Jew hater of the world. But the problem with all of these, I don't mind giving any of these people a platform. My issue is that he never challenges or confronts them. So it makes it seem like everything they say is the Bible, is gospel. And he's just like, here, he is like, you know, a housewife here for the tea. Like, he is here for it. It makes him seem compliant and complicit and in agreement with what they have to say. And that is my issue with that. And that's why I say it's like, it's become so, and I look, I get it, as someone who, even like being on the early, like cutting edge of this, on the early wave, like with all of this before cancel culture, like before its time, constantly, even for myself, railing up against like woke, against these rules, against this, I get how it can put you in a camp of making you seem like extreme the other way, if that makes sense. But this is like going to question to now where it's like it's almost like anti anything sensical on purpose at this point, because, and unfortunately, this is like kind of what we could have predicted because of implementing such strict controls and rules over thought. Now it's like the pendulum in the case of Tucker Carlson, like, so swings the other way. But so, and the example of this pastor, right? So this is a guy who, so he's a Palestinian pastor in Bethlehem. This is a man who is one of those, like, celebrated October, the horrors of October 7th as, you know, resistance. And this is what happens when you're so oppressed and colonized and yada, yada, yada. Like, this is the person that we're dealing with. And this man just spews lies and lies and lies. And Tucker Carlson opens his interview with him saying, you know, how are Christians being treated in all this, and has a bone to pick with the fact that the IDF, in their retaliation against Hamas in Palestine, has killed Christians, right? Like, one of the drone attacks was on a church, a Greek Orthodox church, I believe it was. Tucker basically is siding with everything that this guy has to say because he's like, Western leaders aren't questioning it. Even Christians, like, they don't care. So, like, tell us the real. Instead of going to Christians on the ground in Israel and Palestine, we're going to choose this guy. So this guy is just spewing all of this nonsense about how all of these Christians are, you know, fleeing and they're being persecuted and they're purposefully being attacked, when I will have you know that actually, the it first of all, Israel had the most growing and prosperous Christian population in the Middle East at the fastest rate. Okay. And that, because there are parts of Jerusalem, I'm not going to get into it right now, but there are parts of Jerusalem that are like divvied up to where like Palestinians can go, the Jews can go, like Muslims can go, Jews can go, what have you. So before the Palestinians took over that specific territory, Christians made up 20% of the population, and now it's down to like 1 or 2%. So what does that say? Also in Israel, and I got all of this off of a Free Press, again, article about all of this, but in Israel, it's actually Christian Israelis who go to pursue a higher education, even at a higher rate in Israel than Arab or Muslim Israelis or Jewish Israelis. Meanwhile, okay, so I say, like, I don't know, I don't want to speak for them, but I think they're like chilling, happy, able to celebrate Christmas, like, what have you. Meanwhile, like, good luck sitting in, around, or near Santa's lap, so much as holding a little, forget a Christmas tree, a Christmas bush in the sight of Hamas, who have literally basically said, like, you can't celebrate Christmas here. So, like, what are we even saying? So, again, the fact that Tucker Carlson doesn't push up against someone like this at all, it makes you look like you are on the side of these people. And again, it's like, yes, we want to question authority always. We want to question those in power always. But again, it makes me question, like, to what end, right? So that brings me to Candace Gate and Candace Owens, who has parted ways with the Daily Wire. And the reason that I wanted to do a deep dive on this and really know my stuff is because they're speculating that they parted ways because Ben Shapiro, who is not the end all be all at the Daily Wire, he's one of the co-founders, but there are people higher than Ben Shapiro. I've met with the Daily Wire before. That's a whole other story for another day. But there's like an editor in chief, there's a CEO, there are people above him. So he doesn't pull the final strings and make the final decisions. But people speculate that, you know, again, there's been a dispute because Ben Shapiro is an Orthodox Jew. His wife is Israeli. He has very strong views about Israel, where Candace Owens has been very, you know, challenging of Israel and all this. And I'm going to get into all that. So people like jump on the bandwagon and say, like, she's anti-Semitic, this. So I wanted to do the research for myself to make my own, again, because it's so important to look, because, and I noticed too, they even do with Candace Owens, they pull out little bites out of context and it doesn't truly reflect what she actually said. So it's so important to like go in and do the research for yourself. Like, pull a Miss Fribble in the magic school bus, spend a day in the library, and you won't regret it. You know, like, get those wheels up there turning, kids. I know TikTok has rotted your brains, but you know, it's up there in there somewhere. So before we get to all of this and like where I feel about, and like, again, the overarching question of, is it hypocritical of the Daily Wire, when conservatives have made it their hill to die on, you know, to be all about free speech, when conservatives, see case in point with NPR, were silenced or shut out, you know, with Twitter, with that whole thing, you know, is it hypocritical? So I'm going to get to that in a second. But first, I want to establish like a little bit about what I saw. And, you know, do I personally think that she's an anti-Semite? Because the thing with Candace Owens, right, and her version of questioning authority is questioning the Israeli government, the IDF, Netanyahu, et cetera. So I watched her entire interview on The Breakfast Club, which I will say, I actually agreed with everything she said, except for her stuff around this. I watched her debate with a prominent rabbi. I watched her debate with a Jewish comedian. I read all of her tweets, the back and forth with Ben Shapiro, and all this, because it really went down in the light of October 7th. Candace Owens was a little, you know, combative and flippant about what had happened, and Ben Shapiro said it was a disgrace, and from there it was history, which our college kids don't like to know anything about. Apparently, quick sidebar, but also having to do pertaining to all this. So here's my view, right, in a nutshell about Candace Owens. Is she an anti-Semite? You know, I think it's a with her, I think it's what we're seeing a lot of. I don't think it's this outward, blatant, like, I hate Jews. Jews are bad. Jews are disgusting. They don't deserve to live, to have their own state, to prosper. And she's also one of those who has said, again, in a flippant way, you know, I have condemned Hamas. I have condemned, you know, October 7th. And to me, it's not about that. It's about the fact that she does what so many people do, which is, I think, like an underpinning and really kind of on the down low version of anti-Semitism, which is, in light of what happened and in Israel's retaliation, she puts soul, criticism, challenge, scrutiny, and focus on Israel. So is that anti-Semitic? I mean, think about it, right? Like, why hasn't anything, and again, it's okay to be critical of Israel. Israelis are critical of Netanyahu in Israel, so that's okay. But my issue is, like, you literally have the Jewish state, okay, the only one in the world with 6 million people, when there are hundreds and millions of Muslims and countries and Arab countries, right? You have a state, the Israeli state, smaller than the size of New Jersey. You have Hamas, who in their actual charter is to annihilate the Jewish race. And they won't stop until it is literally like, find them behind the bushes, find them here, find them there, and kill them all. Okay. So there's no hiding this. And so this is where I feel like it's low key, perhaps anti-Semitic, because again, when it comes, if this were any other group of people, it would be out of question. What? People are, and with Hamas, in the case of October 7th, are filming it and broadcasting it and parading around proudly. With any other people, if you have any brain cell, just one floating around up there, you would go, well, gee, that's completely inhumane and egregious and really immoral and not okay. And so the fact that with Jews, again, it's always like, or a second guessing, or brushing under the rug, or look, maybe we should look at it further, or in some cases justifying it, that to me is it's dehumanization of Jews. And I feel like Candace Owens, even though she'll bring, it's this sort of like baiting, because she'll do this and then she'll bring on rabbis, she'll bring on Jewish thought leaders and be like, and so it makes it look like she's not an anti-Semite, because she'll be like, well, what? She'll go ahead. I'll give her credit. She'll debate them and go toe to toe. But in her being like, well, what? Am I an anti-Semite? You know, it makes it, it kind of like refutes it and diffuses it and makes it look like she's not. And so that's my kind of issue with it. So it's not so black and white, no pun intended. And she even like, she'll just do these broad stroke sweeps of calling what Israel's doing, you know, like it's a genocide and all this. She called out a representative who insinuated that there are no innocent Palestinians, which of course I don't agree with that. And I don't think that's an okay thing to say. But in light of that, you know, she said, you know, genocide is never okay. And like, trust me, like this will age well. So again, it's these sort of, you know, putting the breadcrumbs down of these things, of the dehumanization of Jews. And again, villainizing them in protect, even if you agree with the tactics or not, like in protecting their right to exist, period, and demonizing and villainizing them. So, and also like, if we're going to get into the tweets, she also went on this whole like thing at Ben Shapiro when it first went down with them, like tweeting like Bible passages. And at one point in all caps, like when she was having this dispute with Ben, tweeting Christ is King. So to me, it's like, there's an argument to be made of like, that is like just plain rude. Like that is actually just a really inconsiderate thing to do of like, yeah, I know this is about your religion and your race and your people, but like my guy over here reigns supreme. And so y'all will all be judged on judgment day. Like that to me is just off color. It's like, okay, like Christ is King, like, cool, like finger guns, thumbs up, like good to know. But also it's like, but isn't that the point? Like, I thought the whole thing with Christianity was why? Like, why is that even why? Like, I thought the whole thing was like, love thy neighbor, and when you die, God will and Jesus will like judge you for yourself, and that'll be the ultimate, judgment day of like what your fate will be. So like, won't that be the test of time anyway? Like, why? Like, just why? So all that goes to say, I think again, and the thing with Candace Owens that like previously with Tucker Carlson, I get it. Her thing is, again, going up against what we're told in narratives and authority. She called out BLM, which ended up being a total sham. COVID vaccines, she calls out a lot about Me Too. Like all of these things that are in the shadows, that people are afraid to say, Democrats debilitating Black people and keeping them dependent on the government and not allowing them to thrive. Like all of these things, right? So again, I think it just comes with a little bit of like discernment. I don't think it's one size fits all, but I think it's interesting how you look at, again, questioning authority and if and when it becomes fringe and goes too far. And a little sidebar off of that before we conclude here is, to me, it's so interesting how it, until late, and I'm going to give you a recent example. Notice how when it comes to extremes, like woke, like really woke leftist ideas are never like canceled, so to speak, or fired or deplatformed or whatever. Like no one is, imagine like someone being fired for being like, I'm gonna put my pronouns in my profile, ask you them before an interview, talk about how everything is misogynistic. Like they would be giving you 10 million Nobel Peace Prize and trophies and like Pop Warner cheerleading trophies. Like that would never happen. But on the even like when it becomes too fringe for the right, like you have Fox News, right, who let go of Tucker, and like now Daily Wire with Candace. So I think that that is interesting in and of itself, and again plays into the NPR thing, how on the whole, you would just be blind to see this. You would literally be the three blind mice to see this all in one. I don't know how else to say it. About how the extreme woke, if you want to call left ideas, are just more widely accepted and praised, And to put a button in my thing about the Daily Wire, this is why I kind of feel conflicted and at odds because, like I said, I'm a free speech advocate. I want more of it all the time. Like, I'm happy to have people I disagree with. And I like, again, I liked seeing what Putin had to say, even though he's a ruthless dictator who would have somebody like me or Tucker Carlson, that's the irony, taken out in 5 seconds in his country for having any dissent. But I want to see these things. I want to see the people that I disagree with. And so, like I said, people like conservatives at the Daily Wire and Benjamin, they took Gina Carano on after she was fired from The Mandalorian to make movies. Like, again, they made it their hill to die on when conservatives were being persecuted, shut out from the dialogue. Yet when it's someone in their own sphere that they don't like, is it hypocritical that they go on and part ways? And Ben Shapiro's defense in all of this has been, well, we're a specific publisher. We're not a platform like a Twitter, like a Facebook. We're employing these people, we're employees to publish certain things. And that's where it gets dicey because don't forget, Twitter too was a private. It wasn't like an NPR that was publicly funded. So they technically didn't have, even though we made it the public town square, they didn't have any obligation to. It's unfortunate because it's been become a total clusterfuck of a 1984 clusterfuck, but they could choose, pick and choose who they want to amplify and shadow ban and what have you. Like they're private institution, and same thing with Ben Shapiro, what he's saying, right? So, but then it makes me feel like, okay, like, are you worried because Candace Owens is going to make you lose some of your conservative base that's pro-Israel? Like, that's not cool either. So it's like, be about free speech or don't. But that's why I feel conflicted because on one end of it, I'm like, be about it, period. But on the other end of it, it's like, okay, if I'm an employer and I have my own, right now my platform's just me, but say I have my own platform and I'm paying these people and these contributors and these personalities to speak. Like, do I want to pay out of my own pocket for them to be spewing this shit? Like, that's where, I don't even have a definitive answer for you, but I just wanted to be transparent about being conflicted there. Okay, so with all of that being said, I talk about how there has been an overwhelming amount of tolerance when it comes to, like, you know, extreme wokey leftists versus on the right. And, you know, you even think about, right? Like, I thought about, like, Don Lemon, how he was let go for, like, not being, like, woke enough, right? Because he was misogynistic against Nikki Haley when he was on CNN, being like, oh, she's old, washed up. Like, she's too old to be running for president. And they let him go in light of that, right? You even see, like, as of late, you know, when Iran attacked Israel, you see these activists cheering, like, hands off Iran, death to America, death to Israel. Again, the nonsensical derangement there. It, when the roles are reversed, if it's anything, if it was, like, during COVID standing up against it, or if it's anything pro-Trump, or if it's anything like riots are bad, like, you, scram, like, you're toast, like, you're burnt ass toast. So that's why I say up until now, because I find it really fascinating. And it's a really great, I think, kind of close to all of this, leave you all with something to think about. And again, none of this is, like, in a neat little box or a nice little bow. But news about the USC valedictorian. So keep in mind, USC is the same school who literally fired a professor because they said a word, I think it was in Chinese, that sounded like a racial slur, okay? And they were kaput. So what's interesting here is that the USC valedictorian is this young woman who has allegedly posted all of these anti-Israel sentiments. And so what's crazy is they came out and basically are prohibiting her from speaking, which is kind of kosher, again, no pun intended, but at every, like, ceremony at colleges, at high schools, what have you, the valedictorian speaks at graduation out of safety concerns because they were getting threats and uproar for people giving this woman a platform. And this is where, you know, and this may be unpopular, but this is where, to me, like, this should be really concerning to you, because this whole thing, think about how long we've been doing this, right? This whole thing of it's for your safety. I mean, I even think about in when you think about COVID, right? God forbid, there can't be any descendants about COVID. I had Dr. Robert Malone on my show. We had a whole conversation about this. One of the architects of the mRNA technology used for the vaccines. And he was deplatformed. He was smeared, reputation, business ruin, all of it. You know, because it's for your safety. You have to listen to us, as if, like, random people in the government know more than Dr. Malone, right? It's all for your safety. Same idea. Even I saw a clip when Candace Owens went to a college and to speak, and one of the kids said, well, trans kids are threatened and feel unsafe by your presence. Like, the mere, like, thought of that's for your safety. I even think about when I was an entertainment reporter, like, all of these things I tried to pitch that wouldn't get run through, in which I said, you know, women, you know, I as a woman, I'm not the victim here, or this male is not the perpetrator here, whether it be, you know, I wrote one about Dave Portnoy or the Morgan Freeman one. Again, it's like, no, like, the man is bad, the woman is the victim. It's for your safety, right? And that is where it's really a big, I hate to say problematic because it's so buzzy. See, even the sun is shining on me as I go to this outro, because you know what? God, the man upstairs, the they, them, the universal being, they know that I'm about to shed some light on this situation, okay? Just descending from the heavens here. But this is what is really scary, is this idea of, again, it's harmful. It's for your safety. And even for someone like this USC valedictorian, I know for a fact that I don't agree with her, but you know what? Like, buck up, people. It's like, this is the problem. This is back to the NPR, back to the VH1. It's like, we are so desperate to coddle and to coddle people of what they can't hear or what they shouldn't hear. And that it's for safety. And that's the problem with this entire culture, that we can't even hear or think outside of our own thing because we're so used to being so goddamn coddled of what they think we need to hear, of what we want to hear. You know, coincidentally, as this is going on, there was a meeting in Brussels with all of these international leaders. This wasn't some rinky dink riot, right? You have like a prime minister, this, a right wing, like a conference gathering. And it was literally brigaded by police and stopped by the mayor for this very thing. And they too cited for safety. And again, it's like, if we can't hear things, if we can't hear things outside of ourselves for our safety, this is straight Orwellian. This, I did a 1984 book club during the pandemic, and I'm happy to revive it. Like, no, trust us. Like, it's for your good. It's for your safety. It's for your protection. That is the last thing on earth that you want. The truth of the matter is, if they were just honest about it and they were straight about it, it would just be, you're not allowed to say this, right? So in the case of USC, they have no obligation to, even though it's, you know, ceremonious and that it's tradition to have the valedictorian speak, but I do think it is their obligation to be straight with the students and be like, you know what, actually, you just can't say this. Because that's really what they mean. That's what they meant with all this all along, with BLM, with COVID, with whatever, with Me Too, with whatever it is. It's not, oh, it's for your safety. It's really just, you know, you can't say this. So then just be straight about it. It's like, they will literally stop at nothing. That to me is just what is absolutely outrageous, insulting to human beings, because we can think and decide for ourselves, but ultimately really bad for our culture and society. Because if we're not deciding and we're not taking in all the information, then who will? Like, what could possibly go wrong there, right? So some big picture ideas to leave you off with today, as the sun is setting, I went way over time, but that's okay. We had to catch up on lost time, is, you know, this coddle culture of coddling people to only hear what the safe space, so to speak. And that's really dangerous. The idea of, again, needing more and more and more speech, let it out of the shadows, not less, because what is the alternative? The idea, again, like in the case of like a Candace Owens, of a Tucker Carlson, my immediate reaction was, you know, yes, I get it. You're questioning authority, but you know, when does it go too far? Like, to what end? And then I stopped myself and I thought, you know, but who is to say, where do you draw the line? Who is to say if and when it goes too far? So that's why I say, like, let it all out, let it all air out. And you know what? If Tucker Carlson doesn't want to challenge any of these motherfuckers, that's on him. That ain't on us. That ain't on you. That's on that dodo brain. So, you know, that's something to think about too. And also, like, to give us the information and let us decide. Like, I want to hear it all. When I listened to The Breakfast Club with Charlamagne the God, Candace Owens, he said, more conversation, less confrontation. And I agree so much. It's like, let us decide. I don't need to be shielded. I don't need to be protected. You know, I want to hear all of these various views. This is what I was advocating for back in 2016 when I had an outlying view. Again, 2 years later. It is like, you know, leap year, but not. And the idea of, like, even in the case of the USC, the valedictorian, it's like, are we really with the NPRs? Like, are we really that petrified? Are we really that petrified of hearing people's thoughts outside of our own? I would personally rather hear the most egregious, you know, hate speech and, you know, whatever it is, because to me, and this may be unpopular, I would rather trust us to decide than the big guy. I'm more afraid of them than I am afraid of us. So put that in your little Putin pipe and smoke it.